All right, James chapter 2 is where we are, and the PowerPoint will work better once I connect it. So I was visiting before Sunday school, and I didn't actually connect it. So that's not the sound booth's problem. That is operator error right here, but we'll get it. So James chapter 2 is where we are, and we're talking about faith and works. So we started last week with James chapter 2, around verse 14. And we covered pretty much verses 14 through 18 or 19. But for sake of flow, we'll read that again, and then we'll move on to the second section there. James chapter 2, verse 14. What did the prophet, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works, can faith save him? That is the hypothetical question. I think it's a hypothetical. It could be that James was answering arguments that had actually been batted around in the Jerusalem church there. Verse 15, if a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you saying to them, depart in peace, be you warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so, faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, I have faith, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest there is one God, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son upon the altar? Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect? And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Those are two separate quotes being referenced there. Verse 24, you see then how that by works a man is justified, and not by faith only. Likewise also, was not Rahab the harlot justified by works, when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. Now, if I were just doing topical things, I could skip this section. But we're not. We're going straight through. So there's some interesting things here. But in James chapter 2, verses 14 through 20, we have a hypothetical question. You know, can one guy say, well, I have faith. Another guy says, I have works. And I think the whole context here of 14 through 26 is discussing having those independently of one another. Well, I have only faith, or I have only works. And I think the common thread of truth through 14 through 26, the common teaching is this: you cannot have one without the other. Okay, now let me qualify. You can have works. Did the Pharisees have works? Yeah, they did. But the Pharisees did not have works that were acceptable to God. Okay, so works that are acceptable to God are an outgrowth of faith. Those are inextricably linked. Though that is an inseparable bond, and that's what's being driven at here. Again, verse 18, you have faith and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. That verse in verse number 18 is key to understanding verse number 25, or 21 through 25, where it says, he was justified by works. That really the works were the evidence of faith. But verse number 19, thou believest there's one God, thou doest well, the devils also believe and tremble. Is that a saving faith on the part of the devils? No. And see, that really is the crux of this argument. James says, all right, you want to say you only have faith, and you want to say I only have works, and they're separate one from another. James's illustration here is the devils believe that there is a God, but that is not a faith that motivates them to worship Him. They have made a choice not to worship God. So here you have in verse number 20, wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? You have the same statement again in verse 26. As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. So you have the illustration. You have one illustration in verses 15, 16, 17. If you see a brother in the church in need and you wish him well without helping him, is that really evidence of a heart of love? And the answer is no. What he's saying is, in the same way, to claim you have faith with no evidence of works is also hollow. But then he goes on to give two illustrations. Verse 20, faith without works is dead. Then in verses 21 through 25, you have two more examples that are given. In verse number 21, was not Abraham our father justified by works when it offered Isaac his son on the altar? Now, why does it say our father? Who's his target audience? Yeah, it's to the 12 tribes scattered abroad, according to the introduction of the book of James. So his target audience is primarily the Jews. So when he wanted to give an example, he went to the primo example. They all referenced Abraham. That was their one of the men that they held in the highest regard. It was God, Moses, Abraham, and Moses. You know, those, that was their highest regard. So he says, was not Abraham our father justified by works when he had offered Isaac his son on the altar? Now, the expected answer here is yes, but if we refer back to Genesis, when does the Bible say that Abraham believed God? Back in Genesis chapter 15. All right, back in Genesis chapter 15, Abraham is talking with God. And God says, you know, I'm your shield and your exceeding great reward. And Abraham says, Lord, what are you going to give me? Because I go childless and the steward of my house is going to be my heir. Then verse number 4 of Genesis 15, the word of the Lord came unto him saying, this shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. Verse 5, he brought him forth abroad and said, look now to heaven and tell the stars, in other words, count them, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. Verse number 6, and he believed in the Lord, and he, the Lord, counted it to him, Abraham, for righteousness. So when was Abraham justified by faith? Genesis 15. The rest of this chapter describes how God ratified his covenant with them. Genesis 15 gives the procedure for the ancient covenants. And the way that this was fulfilled shows us that it was an unconditional covenant, dependent on God only. There was nothing that Abraham could do or fail to do that would affect the fulfillment of that covenant. But my point is, in Genesis 15, the Bible says he believed God and God counted it for righteousness. What's the illustration given in James chapter 2? Abraham was justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar. Where in Genesis did he offer Isaac as a sacrifice? Genesis 22. Okay, so at this point, we're talking about at least 20 years later, probably 30 years later. The Bible says that Abraham was around 75 when he came out of Ur and went to wherever God was going to take him, which ended up being the land of Canaan. And the speculation is that, Ishmael was somewhere around 10, 12 years old, you know, when Isaac was born, something like that. So at this point in Genesis 15, when God confirmed the covenant with him, he said, one born in my house is my heir. And God said, no, one that comes out of your own bowels will be your heir. At this point in Genesis 15, Ishmael had not been born yet. And if Ishmael was born 10, 12 years before Isaac, well, that's 10 years. And then Isaac was anywhere between 10 and 20 years old. I think he was most likely in that 12 to 16 range when Abraham offered him on the altar. But, I mean, just taking the conservative numbers, 10 years for, you know, the life of Ishmael before Isaac was born, and 10 years old when God told him to offer Isaac as a sacrifice, that's 20 years, right? it could have been easily 25 years from, for that timeline. My point is, Genesis 15 says that he believed God and it was counted unto him for righteousness. It was at least 20 to 25 years later when he offered Isaac on the altar. Okay? So James chapter 2 is not saying that Abraham's justification in the sight of God was accomplished by offering Isaac on the altar. But here James says, was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac on the altar? The key is in verse 22. Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works was his faith made perfect. That word, the term there, made perfect, has the idea of to fulfill, to complete, or to bring to maturity. It's the same word that's used in James chapter 3 where it says the man that can control his tongue is a perfect man, a mature man, a complete man. Faith is something internal that God knows. But that is going to naturally result in, certain actions. Faith, true faith, will result in actions of demonstrate a trust in God, a love for God, and obedience to God. Think of it this way. If you think of it as a seed that's planted, when the seed begins to sprout and life comes to be, it's there, but you can't necessarily see it right away, right? By the time something pokes up above the ground, there's already root system that's in the ground and growing. But the natural process of that seed sprouting is growth of the plant and eventually producing the fruit, whatever it is, whether it's the bloom of a flower or the fruit of a vegetable or a fruit tree or a nut tree or whatever, it's going to produce. That's the natural outgrowth. Faith is the root. It's the part that initially is unseen, and unless you're growing a little science project for your elementary school kids in a clear cup where you can actually see it, the root tends to remain unseen. Unless you get certain kinds of trees where the roots tend to poke up above ground eventually and make mowing around them more difficult. But the general concept is that root remains unseen. How do I know there's a root ball there? Right? Brother Larry's got, big trees around his house. I don't know if any of them are, close enough to fall on the house or not. Hopefully not, but I know he's got woods around the backside and everything. How do we know that those trees have a big root system? Well, right now they're dumping leaves all in his yard and on his roof and trying to clog his gutters. Can you see the root? No, we can't see the root. Now, if he decides, all right, this tree's too close to the house, I'm getting rid of this one, he could do it the hard way with a cross-cut saw or an axe. Or he could work smarter, not harder, get a piece of equipment, and push that thing down. That would be the preferred method of getting rid of that big tree, right? But in the process of pushing that big tree down, what's going to be exposed? You push it down, the root ball tends to come up from, tear up from the earth, and you may have to cut that main root or the tap root to get it to release the way you want it to. But what I'm saying is, you can't see the root system. But you know it's there because the tree's still putting out leaves, putting out fruit. It's still growing year after year. On the flip side, you can tell when a tree's dead, right? Whether it got struck by lightning, it got hit with disease, it got old and reached its life expectancy or whatever. You can tell when the root is no longer doing its job. A tree starts to decay and fall apart. There's no more leaves and that kind of thing. Faith is the root, okay? It is necessary, but the natural product of that is good works, works of worshiping God. And if I could say it this way, the primary point here is works of obedience to God. Those works that please God are the natural outgrowth of faith. I mean, it's ridiculous to say, well, I have a root, but nothing's growing above ground. I mean, that's just a ridiculous expectation. If you have a root that's alive, something's going to grow above ground. That's the way it works. In the same way, true faith, which is, the thrust of James chapter 2, is true faith. True faith will produce something. It will produce obedience. It will produce worship, it will produce a desire to please God, which is why you have here faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect. The idea of perfect being brought to maturity, I mean, there is, does not the scripture talk about, if I could say it this way, baby faith or weak faith? Doesn't Romans talk about a weak brother and a strong brother? The illustration is given, excuse me, of the different types of seed. Excuse me, the seed falling on the different types of ground, and you have good ground and thorny ground and whatever. But there is the expectation that seed is going to produce fruit. The full outgrowth of that would be made perfect or brought to maturity. It's strong, it's established, it's productive, it's producing whatever fruit that tree or plant was designed to produce. Okay? But faith and works go together. They're inextricably linked. To say that I have a root, and it's a good one, and it's alive, trust me, and there's nothing coming up is unreasonable. You ever tried to cut down maybe like hedgerow bushes or something, and you cut it down to the stumps and think it's dead? What happens in about 6 weeks if it's summertime? All kinds of sprigs sticking up out of what looks like a dead stump. Why? Because that root's alive, so what's it doing? It's pushing out new leaves and starting the process over again. It's pushing out new growth. It is not logical to say I've got a live root that's not pushing anything above ground. In the same way, it is not reasonable to say, you know, I've got a healthy tree here sitting on top of the ground, but there's no roots. I have works, but no faith. Or I have faith with no works. They are inextricably linked. You cannot separate the one from the other. If you have good works, works that are pleasing to God, the root, they are rooted in faith. That is the root from which they draw nourishment and stability. If there is a root of true faith, it will produce growth and obedience and evidence to the existence of true faith. So the whole hypothetical or the argument that James is going against here is that, well, I have faith alone. That's all I need. He's saying that is an invalid proposition. This guy over here says, well, I have good works. That's all I need. Again, both sides of that argument are invalid. The necessity is that faith and works go together. Works do not, you know, obtain salvation. Okay? Ephesians chapter 2, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of what? Works, lest any man should boast. So why does this say then, in verse 21, Abraham our father was justified by works? I think verse 22 explains that through faith, through works, the faith was brought to fulfillment. In the eyes of God, we are justified by faith. But how are our fellow men going to know that? By the evidence they see. You ever seen someone make a profession of faith and you start to see little things that change in their life? You start to see different behavior than what there was before? I mean, to us, that's kind of a confirmation, okay, something's different with this person. So in the sight of man, if I could say it that way, that is an evidence of justification. Those works are not earning them favor with God. Those good works are not getting them justified in the eyes of God. But rather, in the eyes of man, it's confirming, okay, yeah, there's something different with them. Abraham was justified by works in the sight of man, but that did not obtain his salvation. Verse 23, the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness. And a separate one, he was called the friend of God. Verse 24, you see then how that by works a man is justified and not by faith only. Again, you have the idea. Some people have latched onto this and said, see, faith alone is not enough. You have to have works that go with it. The whole point that's being made here is that faith with no works is dead. Okay, there is true faith will have works, just like I have tried to illustrate with a root and a plant. You cannot say I've got a living root that never produces any growth, any stem, any leaves, nothing. That's not a living root. The Bible clearly says in Hebrews chapter 11, without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. The Bible is very clear that the basis of our salvation is faith. What the point James is trying to prove here is that faith, that a claimed faith that never produces any sprouts or stems or leaves or anything, is not true faith. The natural result of a true faith is going to be growth, obedience, you know, visible results. The ultimate fulfillment of that in Abraham's life, the ultimate outward proof of his faith, was that he was willing to offer his son as a sacrifice. What does Hebrews 11 tell us about that? He made up his mind that God could raise him from the dead if that's what he needed to do, but God told me to do this, I'm going to trust God. That was an evidence to all of us, still a testimony 3,000 years later of Abraham's faith. That was the ultimate outgrowth of that, or if I could say it this way, a justification in the eyes of man. But his justification in the eyes of God happened in Genesis 15, or maybe prior to that, you know. But Genesis 15, Abraham believed God, it was counted unto him for righteousness. That's where his justification, or if we'd say it in New Testament terms, that's where his salvation took place. His justification in the eyes of man happened in Genesis 22 when he offered his son on the Isaac on the altar. That's what it means in verse 24 when it says, "You see then how that by works a man is justified, and not by faith only." Back up in verse number 20, I skipped over a phrase I should probably include here. But in James chapter 2, verse 20, it says, "Wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead?" That word "wilt" there is from the root word that it refers to our will or our choice. Okay? So I could say it this way. Are you willing to know this? Are you willing to understand this? Because the example previously was, well, I have faith alone. I have works alone. And he says, are you willing to accept God's truth that faith and works are not exclusive, but they go together? Faith is the starting point, and the natural growth is fruit is a natural outgrowth of a living root of faith. Then that gives the example of Abraham, like the supreme example for the Jewish people. But then who's example number two? Verse 25. "Likewise also was not Rahab the harlot justified by works when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way." Right next door to Hebrews, turn back a couple of pages, however many it is for you, to Hebrews chapter 11. What does Hebrews 11 and verse 31, what does that have to say about Rahab's situation? "By faith, Rahab the harlot perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace." So when you combine Hebrews 11 with James chapter 2, it kind of gives us a picture. Now, if we go back to Joshua chapter 2, I'm going to read it so I don't misquote it, but the spies found something very interesting. Now, in Joshua chapter 2, Joshua had sent two spies in. Two men traveling together would not raise a lot of suspicion. That was fairly common in that day. If he'd sent 15 or 20 or a large group, it would have caught more attention. But the two men went, and they were looking for a place to stay. They came to Rahab the harlot's house. That does not mean that there was anything immoral there, but harlot was her profession, which kind of naturally went with the hotel business. Okay? But they found a place to stay, but then it was very interesting to them what Rahab had to say. Joshua 2, verse 4, "The woman took the two men and hid them, and then lied about it. Verse 6, she had brought them up to the roof of the house and hid them. Verse number 9. Verse 8 says she came up to them on the roof. Verse 9, she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror has fallen upon us, and all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did unto the two kings of the Amorites, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And we heard these things, our heart did melt. Neither did there remain any courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, notice this phrase, he is God in heaven above and earth beneath. Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I've showed you kindness, you'll show me kindness. By the time the two spies got there, Rahab had already decided that she believed that the God of Israel was the true God. How was that evidenced? She put her life on the line to hide these spies. Okay? She put them on the roof, hid them, and told the men, hey, they left and went back that way. If you chase them that direction, you'll catch up with them. And then she told the men, all right, I sent them, I'm just going to say south. I don't know if that's right or not, but I sent them south. You better go north or west for a few days. And then after they get tired of chasing you, then you can work your way back to your people. All right. We know from the rest of the Bible account in the book of Joshua, she lived on the wall. She was able to let a rope down the out the window, and they were able to climb down the side of the wall using that rope. They were able to go hide for a few days and then go back and reunite with the people. Rahab had already decided that she believed that the God of Israel was the true God. How was that evidence to everybody else? I think these spies were just as shocked or more shocked than any of us to hear, hey, we know your God's the real God. What? Am I in Jericho? This is an idolatrous city. Did I get the wrong address? No, but Rahab had already decided, I believe the God of Israel is the true God. Now, how did that become evident to everybody else? Well, the New Testament, Hebrews 11, James 2, says that her works evidenced her belief in the God of Israel. That was the natural outgrowth of that. I believe that the God of Israel is the true God, so I'm going to follow that God. I am going to do my best to please that God. I mean, did she know everything about how to do it? No. Had she seen the tabernacle? Probably not. Did she know anything about the trespass offering and the sin offering and the burnt offering and the meal offering? No. But she just knew that's the real God and that's the way I want to go. So Hebrews 11 says Rahab was justified by faith. James chapter 2 says Rahab was justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way. Is that contradictory? No. It's another illustration of the truth here in James chapter 2 that true faith is like a root that will, without fail, produce above ground visible growth, whether it's leaves, stem, trunk, fruit, flower, whatever the plant may be, that root of true faith, if it is alive, will produce growth. She had decided by faith she believed in the God of Israel. That faith was evidenced in her actions of trying to help the spies and trying to help Israel. She was trying to side with the God of Israel the best she knew how. So, Abraham, the chief Jewish example. And then what example is Rahab? What's her nationality? Gentile. So you have Jew and you have Gentile, both justified by faith here in James chapter 2. Both having genuine faith that produces growth and evidence, being evidenced by good works, works of obedience to God, works that please God. So then that gets us to verse number 26. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. Right now, I don't mean to be crude, but you know, the example here is this. You know, if you have a body and you say, well, they're alive, there's no breathing. You know, can you squeeze my hand? You know, there's no heartbeat. There's no detectable brain activity. There's nothing like that. You can argue that that body is alive all you want to, but that doesn't make it so. Again, this is really just the final repetition of the theme of verses 14 through 26, that if there is a claim of life, there is a claim of true faith, that life will be evidenced by good works, by works of obedience, by works of growth. You have that repeated from verse 20, verse 26, verse 17, faith without works is dead, being alone. So this is the repeated theme through this whole section. True faith is what saves. But true faith is never isolated. True faith will always produce evidence or growth or whatever. So when James chapter 2 says a man's justified by works, what he's saying is that true faith produces good works. That's evidence of the justification that's already happened. It's justification in the eyes of man. Justification in the eyes of God already happened when faith occurred. Okay? Now, as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. I guess then the question for you and me comes down to, is my faith alive or dead? Is your faith alive or dead? Well, I'm here at church. I'm here early. I'm here for Sunday school. Worship service until 11 o'clock, all right? That's a pretty good argument. I'll take that. But, you know, it's been said before, and I think it's fair, if somebody who did not know you at all were to come and just observe you for a month, would they see evidence that your faith is genuine, that your, if I could say it this way, that your religion is sincere? It's not just, okay, well, I go to church on Sunday because that's what my family does, and then the rest of the week I don't look any, my life in public or private doesn't look any different than anybody else ever. I mean, that would not be evidence of true faith, right? A living root produces growth. The flip side is also true. A dead root results in a lack of growth or deterioration. So how do I know if my faith is alive or not? I mean, it should be evidenced. Should be evidenced in a desire to please God, in a desire to fellowship with God, in a desire to do what God has commanded. Now, obviously, we have a battle with our flesh and with our sin nature. Romans 6 and 7 describes that, right? The back and forth tug. I know what I'm supposed to do. I end up not doing that anyway, and kind of that back and forth. It's not a claim for perfection, but rather the whole thrust here is James is arguing against those that would say, well, I have faith alone, and you can't see my heart. You can't judge my faith. And those that say, well, you know, that's a bunch of pie in the sky hogwash. You can see that I have good works. So God is obviously going to be pleased with mine. What James is saying is you're both wrong. True faith that's is like a living root that will of necessity produce growth and fruit of some kind. You cannot separate the one from the other. True faith has both. True faith is that inward belief in God, that trust in God. But the outward evidence of that, where we're kind of, if I can say it this way, justified in the eyes of men, when that faith is brought to complete maturity, is when it is evidenced by the choices that we make, the good works that we do, the obedience, and you know how my faith affects my decisions in life. So, does James chapter 2 contradict Ephesians 2 and Romans 3 and 6 and 10 and all? No. They work together, and the theme is in verse 17, verse 20, and verse 26. Three different times it says, faith without works is dead. Works do not justify, but rather the entire argument is that a living faith will of necessity produce good works. And you cannot claim to have a living faith if there is never any evidence of good works. The works do not justify, but rather the works are evidence of life or living faith. So hopefully that helps us to have our mind wrapped around it again. And you know, if you talk to enough people, that statement's going to come up with some, but it's a good reminder for me. It's not good enough for me to say, well, I was saved 50 years ago, and you know, that's it. My faith should be growing and should be evident to those around me.